Hello, and welcome to the first official episode of The Vintage Gamer, a podcast dedicated to seeking out great games from an earlier era. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. This week, we are going to actually be talking about a game that is celebrating its centennial this year. But before we get into that, I'd like to cover some business. First of all, I'd like to give a big thank you to Mark Johnson of Board Games To Go, and also Rick Thornquist of BoardGameNews.com. I actually sent an email to Mark telling him about the podcast, and I didn't expect him to publicize it for me, so I appreciate that greatly. I'd also like to thank anybody who left comments on that first podcast. I appreciate you listening, and I hope I will live up to your expectations. The other thing I wanted to say, and I don't think I mentioned this in my introduction, is that I'd like to keep this to a 10 to 20 minute podcast. I think that is about the right amount of time to cover one game, and it also meets one of the desired requirements for a podcast, which is that it's good for commutes. Most people have about a 10 to 30 minute commute. My commute is about 10 minutes, so if I have a 20 minute podcast, I can listen to the first half going to work and the second half going home. Okay, now that that is covered, let's get to the game. Like I said, the game I'm going to talk about this week is celebrating its centennial this year, and it is the game called Rook, which is a card game published by Parker Brothers. Actually, I should say it's a card game that was originally published by Parker Brothers and is now published by Winning Moves. And on the rules that I have the Parker Brothers version. It says, all-time favorite bidding card game. So in preparing for this podcast, I did a little research on the history of Rook. Rook was created for people who wanted to play card games but felt a little bit uncomfortable about playing games with standard playing cards because of their association with the tarot and fortune-telling. The Rook deck it's basically a playing card deck, except that instead of suits, there are four different colors. And instead of face cards and aces, the cards just go from 1 to 14. Why 14? I'm not sure. Not 13. Perhaps 13 considered an unlucky number. In any case, having 14 cards allows for a slightly different gameplay than the standard deck of playing cards. You can actually play a lot of these games with a tarot deck because a tarot deck has 14 cards per suit as well. But hey, I would rather stick with the spirit of the game and play with the Rook cards. They're also a better size than tarot cards, which tend to be a little too big. Okay, so what is the actual game of Rook? Well, Rook is a trick-taking game. I'm not going to get into the details of how a trick-taking game works, just for the sake of time. Suffice to say that you have a certain number of people in a circle around a table. Each player places one card in the middle, and usually the player who places the highest card will take what's called a trick. And there are various other rules based on trump suits and what the ranking of the cards are, such like that. And through taking of tricks, you get points. Well, in Rook, the original rules of Rook, as far as I can tell, it's a game for 3 to 6 players. If you're playing with 3 players, you'll remove the cards numbered 1 through 4. With 4 to 6 players, you'll play with all 56 cards. You deal them all out to all the players. Now, some will note that some players will end up with more cards than others, and at least according to these rules, that's fine. After all the cards are dealt out and people sort the cards according to color, then you bid for the right to choose the trump color, which is basically a high suit, if you will. And that starts with the player on the left of the dealer. What you are bidding on is the number of points you think you will win in this hand. And you score points by taking certain cards when you take a trick. The cards that score points are any 5, which is worth 5 points, any 10, which is worth 10 points, and any 14, which is also worth 10 points. So, if you were to make a bid of, say, 60 points, you are saying, at the end of the hand, I will win at least 60 points. Basically, you go around the table, and each player bids. First player says 60. Second player has to raise the bid, or pass. And so it goes around the table. And when 3 people have passed, then the remaining player is the high bidder, and they get the right to choose trump. And as I said, trump is a high suit, Basically, if you don't have cards in a particular suit, you can play a card in a trump suit, and that will beat any other suit, with the exception, of course, if the original suit is trump. Once a high bidder has been determined and trump has been announced, then play begins with the player to the left of the high bidder. In a lot of the trick-taking games that I've played in the past, the high bidder leads, but in this case, it's the person to the left of the high bidder. After this, it plays basically like any other trick-taking game. You go around the table, you play your however many cards following suit, and the person with the highest card takes the trick and then leads the next card, and we go around the table again, and so on after that. Your goal is to win 150 points. Now, obviously, you can't do that on one hand because I think there are only 100 points available in the deck. So you're going to play a few hands of this to win. And this game is not a partnership game, at least the game that I just described is not a partnership game. It's every man for himself. So each individual person is trying to get 150 points. And that's basically Rook. That's regular Rook, the original game as it was laid out in the original rules. Now, I'm not an expert on Rook history, but it appears that once this game went out, and over time, it evolved until it became a partnership game, which was actually played in official tournaments. So in this game, there are four players, and you remove the 1-4 cards, just like you would with the three-player game. And now you include a new card, which is called the Rook, which has a picture of a crow on it. The Rook is worth 20 points if you take it, and it is the high trump card, which means that the Rook beats any other card available. Another change to the game is that rather than dealing out all the cards to all the players, you're going to deal out 9 cards to each player and 5 cards to what's called a nest. It's basically a kitty if you're familiar with other card games. And this kitty is dealt face down so that no players know what's inside it. And I'll explain what that kitty is used for in a little bit later. As I mentioned, this game is a partnership game, so you're playing as two teams of 2 players each, and the teams will sit across from each other at the table. Unlike regular Rook, where the opening bid can be anything, in Tournament Rook, the opening bid must be 70. And now, the winner of the bid, in addition to being able to choose the trump color, also gets to swap cards with the kitty. So you could look at your hand and say, well, I have some low cards here. I'm going to take these 14s and 13s out of the kitty and put them into my hand. Or you could say, well, I have a suit that has only 2 cards in it. I could basically stick these into the kitty and have a void, which would make trumping, if someone else leads, a lot easier later. One other place where this kitty is used, I'm sorry, I should be using the term nest, because that's what is referred to in Rook. So one other place where the nest is used is whoever takes the last trick gets to take the contents of the nest. And I'll talk about a little bit of strategy where you can use there when I get to talking about strategy for Rook. So once the high bidder has chosen trump and has swapped cards with the nest, then play is basically the same. The player to the left of the high bidder leads the first card, and play goes around and people take tricks and so on. And the goal of this game is for one team to win 300 points. So those are what I would consider the two basic games of Rook, so the regular Rook and the tournament Rook. And on top of that, there are lots of other variants. One variant I've seen out there called Kentucky Rook, which apparently is not to be confused with Kentucky Discard, which is tournament Rook. I'm not sure where all these terms come from. In any case, you add the ones back in, and you treat them as aces. So they are now the high cards. They have a ranking higher than 14. There's a minor variant on that, which is called the red one, which is where you add the red one back in, or the red ace, if you like. And this is treated as the highest trump. It's higher than the rook, and it's worth 30 points. And in this case, you would, I believe, put 6 cards into the kitty instead of 5. And then we have games which tend a little bit more towards bridge. We have Display Rook, where the high bidder's partner's hand is laid face up, and the high bidder plays both his or her hand and his or her partner's hand. In addition to the regular points of 5 for 5, 10 for 10, and 10 for 14, and 20 for the rook, Actually, I think in display you don't play with the rook. In any case, you get 2 points for each trick captured. And there are variants that have even more complicated scoring than that. One of them mentioned in the rulebook is called Boston. In this case, you get more points per trick depending on which trump color is chosen. So, for example, if you were to choose red as trump color, then for each captured trick, you would get 10 points. Whereas if you were to choose yellow, then each captured trick counts 4 points. So, that's basically the game of Rook. I actually have had this game for many years. I think I got it in my Christmas stocking 1 year. But I've only played it for the first time a week and a half ago. And the variant that we used was a 3-player variant called 3-player partnership display, which was a little unusual. It was basically the same as 4-player display, except that you dealt out all the cards as if there were 4 players, and then the high bidder gets to turn over basically the dummy 4th hand and play it as if there was a partner there. And the other 2 players act as partners trying to beat the high bidder. One strategy that I discovered in that particular game, and I think it also applies to if you're playing with the Nest, is that you do not bid on the basis of what you believe is in those hidden cards, because you probably will be sadly disappointed. You definitely want to bid on the basis of the number of points you actually believe you can score. And this took a little adjustment for me, because I'm used to games where you bid based on the number of tricks that you think you're going to win. So it took me a little time to get used to a game where you bid for the number of points you're going to win rather than the number of tricks. Obviously, you don't know what points you're actually going to win. If you have points in your hand, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to take them. Obviously, if you have the rook, you are guaranteed to take at least 20 points because no other card can beat the rook. And that's where the strategy that I mentioned comes in. What you can do if you have the rook in your hand and you end up being the high bidder, you can stick a bunch of points into the nest and then save the rook to be your last card played. And then you know that you are guaranteed to win all of those points in the nest. And I think that's one of the reasons that there is another variant, I guess not a variant, people would call it a correction, I'd say, where instead of playing the rook as the high trump, you play the rook as the low trump. So you can just take any other card which is not trump. The problem with the rook is, of course, that the fact that you can take any card with it and is worth more points than any other card in the game is a little unbalancing if you have it in your hand. I've also seen another variant out there where the rook is treated as basically trump 10.5. So within the trump suit, it falls between 10 and 11. Might be a little confusing to play that way, but it's probably worth a try. If you're interested in trying out Rook, there are a couple of computer versions available. The first is called Nate's Kentucky Rook, which you can actually get from Board Game Geek. And the second is called Rook Plus, which I had a little trouble tracking down, but I did find. I will, of course, include links to those in the show notes. So that's about it for the game this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to that. Next week, I think I'm going to be talking about a series of games that you can actually collect online. They were originally published in the 80s, but some enterprising people have put together an online site where you can actually download PDFs and print them to cardstock and play these games again. And that will about wrap it up for today. The Vintage Gamer is a podcast produced weekly and available for direct download or via RSS at www.thevintagegamer.net. Theme music for The Vintage Gamer is provided by Magnatune.com, available on their album Music of the Spheres. I'm your host, Jim Van Verth. If you wish to contact me, you can reach me via Skype at JV Square, or you can send me email at jim.van.verth@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.